Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sam Legasic.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd. This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Oddcast Movies, Music, and Games. And here I am today with my fellow co-host, Dreadful Dan G. Hello, Dan.
Hello, and hello, listeners.
Hello, all you listeners out there. Now, today is a slightly odd one because we are going to be talking about the oddball and one of the leaders of Japanoise, which is Masona. So Dan, straight off the bat, Masona, do you know anything about this guy? Have you heard anything?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I didn't know the name, but well, actually, I kind of thought, have I heard that somewhere? Quite a while ago, I thought I'd like to get into or at least understand some of this genre that he operates in. This noise. So I got hold of a couple of compilations, actually, on a label called Susan Lawley. Extreme music from Japan and extreme music from Africa, both of which I found to be extremely unpalatable. But the extreme music from Japan, and I had to go back just to check this. But yeah, it's actually got like three Masona tracks on it, along with a handful of Merzbo. And that's why picked it up. So I'm more familiar with Merzbo than Masona. I've actually tried to listen to a few Merzbo albums, but I'll admit it's never grabbed me. I've never really quite got it.
Yeah, Merzbo is kind of like the pioneer. He's probably the most famous one, if you can say famous.
Yeah.
of noise generally, but especially Japanoise. Yeah.
What is Japanoise?
What is Japanoise?
And what is noise?
A good question. And what is noise? Well, it's a very good question. I guess like noise, Japanoise is part of the noise genre that basically was the kind of, was the scene that kind of came in the late 80s and early 90s. Noise as a genre, and which people would have just probably guessed from the little blast they would have just heard, from Masona, and we're going to be speaking specifically about his album, All Live Recording at My Room, which was one of his first albums, let's say, released in 1987. And yeah, just taking a look at that, because for me, that was one, I'm not like, I should say now, by the way, I'm not an expert in noise at all. I have a vague interest in the genre. And this is, Masana was always one of the ones that it stood out, because I quite liked seeing his live performances, which we'll kind of get into, even though they're very quick. And this is one which I remember reading in an article saying that it was like one of his finest pieces of work, let's say. And I did enjoy it. So it's kind of like one, it wasn't like a gateway sound, but it was definitely something that inspired or ignited my interest in the genre. So that's kind of why I've picked this specific cool. one out. I guess noise genre, it's hard to kind of, it's weird because within noise as a genre, there's a lot of sub genres to this, yeah. which is you've got, yeah, harsh noise, harsh wall noise is, some people say it's a whole separate other thing. And then you've got things these days like glitch music is kind of similar. But essentially what it is kind of like, how do I put this? It is literally noise. Uh-huh. It is distorted stuff. It kind of plays with, like, the idea of it is basically it kind of plays the, like, plays the idea of what is music and what is not music, and yeah. you know, and sound, and it distorts the meaning or the message that might be behind it, and it can, like, warp what the artist's intent. It's very like avant-garde, and all this stuff. It kind of plays with the sonic foundations of what you perceive, really.
Yeah, to me, it draws quite a lot of parallels with avant-garde music from the 60s and 70s, developments yeah. like Music Concrete. It's basically ambient music, isn't it? It's kind of like textures mm-hmm. and sometimes some very, very small rhythmic shifts, almost imperceptible, that kind of give it a bit of meter and a bit of flow.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard, like, there's a subgenre of power electronics. You heard of that?
Yeah, so I've heard of it. I'm not quite sure what the distinguishing factor is. I guess, like, with noise, and, yeah, I've kind of come on to listen to that. Part of it, I should say, is that it's a lot of it's to do with, like, electronics.
Yeah.
So that's why it sounds quite metallic and harsh, and that's part of what I find quite intriguing about it. So, for instance, like, what Masana uses, and which we'll come on to, and what a lot of people use, and what I used when I was doing some stuff with Rich, the static kind of noise rock outfit yeah. that we've got, is having like a box full of metal box, essentially full of like coins or beads, like not beads, you know what I mean? Like the metal, small metal balls or whatever, and shaking that around. And you can do this yourself. And a lot of these are kind of homebrew kind of stuff. And it will just make that kind of harsh metallic sound. And you play around with it with distortion pedals and feedback loops and all this.
Yeah.
But yes, there's a definite electronic stuff. But yeah, what is the power electronic subgenre of this then?
I'm not sure, but I think from what I've heard, it seems to be a lot more like in your face, visceral, really like quite like noisy to the point mm-hmm. of being unpleasant. Well, to my ears anyway. I mean, there's yeah. a few kind of noise acts that I have enjoyed. There's, I don't know if you know, London-based combo Shit and Shine.
No.
And they're mm-hmm. what's cool, they sound quite different on record too. I think live, they do it all with like dozens of drummers or like they do all kinds of weird experimentation. But I find that a little bit more, some of their releases, a little bit more playful.
Right.
Who else? You know, White House?
No.
White House to me, like the, other than Merzbow, they're like the other big name in the noise genre. Okay. They were from London around that same time, I think like 1980 maybe. I think they.
Right.
Started putting stuff out, and they were done by like the end of the noughties.
Okay.
But other than that, and every now and then I kind of like drop in and see if my tastes have changed.
Because
it is something that I find interesting, you know, a bit like like jazz, something mm-hmm. that just like I didn't get for years. And I was like, there's enough people that like this that there's I respect that there's got to be something in it, and I'm just not getting it. And I kind of think that about noise. So I'm going to be interested to hear what you're taking away from Masonna.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of expand as well on what you were saying, and for me personally, and the reason why I like it is it sounds like horrible. It sounds like big and horrible. It's very visceral. The fact that it's quite random, and it's funny you talk about jazz because, you know, it's kind of got that jazz spontaneity and improvisation element around it. But it's just like the complete antithesis, really, of the idea of music. Even though it's like for most people, and especially same with me when I first heard this stuff, it sounds quite horrible. I actually find it quite cathartic and relaxing. And the fact that you never know where it's going to go, no matter how many times you listen to it, that's part of it. I mean, I looked at the Wikipedia of noise, and I was quite interested to see that they tried to kind of define it. And I was like, well, I'm just going to read this out because it's quite a lot. I'll try and condense it as much as possible. But according to Danish noise and music theorist Torben Sangild, one single definition of noise in music is not possible. Sangild instead provides three basic definitions of noise: a musical acoustics definition, a second communicative definition based on distortion or disturbance of a communicative signal, and a third definition based in subjectivity. So what is noise to one person could be meaningful to another. What is considered unpleasant sound yesterday is not today. And he says, there's four types of noise: unwanted noise, unmusical sound, any loud sound, and a disturbance in any signaling system, such as static on a telephone. Loads of people kind of go into like, what is noise? And it's just quite interesting because no one can kind of like pin it down. So like they talk here about how like you've got the John Cage composition, 4:33, which was, if you remember, just where he sat at a like piano and it was just silence for that amount of time. And the idea was that the noise around you was the music itself. So it's like that, except with noise as we know it, or as we're talking about today, it's much more harsh, aggressive, and has, it's just a bit more anger to it. Whereas that's probably like the nice noise such. This is like a bit more like actual noise, combining that idea of that unwanted sound.
It's funny because, the last episode we did was Tetsuo.
Yes.
And this feels like it kind of goes hand in hand. That film and this kind of music seem to be born out of the same era and experience.
Mm-hmm. Especially, you're completely right, and especially with Masonna and that specific Japanese sound, very industrial, gritty and all this stuff. I mean, and that's part of it. Like, you've got industrial noise as a whole subgenre, I believe.
Yeah.
And then you've got, like, on the lighter end, like noise rock. And, you think, like, Sonic Youth always started with noise rock. I would argue it's obviously more rock than noise, but there's an element of it there, sure. 65 Days of Static, right there, early stuff, I think, was, like, if I remember rightly, was a bit more, like, noise-based. I mean, but you go back as far as, like, when you think of, like, the Beatles with Revolution 9 on the White Album.
Yeah.
That's just a whole bunch of noise, basically, or sounds just put over the top of each other. It's a kind of collage of sound. And then there's also that Lou Reed album and the Metal Machine music. Similar. It's a similar thing. It's not like this thing hasn't been done in a commercial capacity before. I guess, like, with before I go into the Masonna stuff, like with Japanese as well, there's an element here which is, it's like an art form. So for instance, there's one of the big ones as well is Hannah Tarash, who is insane. Basically, at one point for one of his live gigs, he destroyed the venue with a bulldozer.
That kind of reminds me of the KLF, like the stunts that they did. Like, the KLF was just a big conceptual art project, wasn't it? With some music in the middle that was kind of like satirized the music industry. They're always doing stupid stuff like that. Didn't they burn £1 million?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Something really weird. Yeah, these kind of stunts. This is the same kind of thing, but based around noise. It's quite interesting. And it's the idea that it's like you can't even define it as like good or bad, which is weird. And what we will actually try to do today, to a degree, but it's kind of irrelevant because there's just no baseline basically for something like this. And I think it's interesting because when you, and I'll come on to like the review part of it, towards the end of what I only was only able to find out like one kind of funny review, put it that way. I thought there'd be more, but there just isn't of this particular album anyway. But yeah, it's kind of, it's very, very interesting to see how people distinguish this piece of work to his other pieces of work, for instance, and how you can, how they have that frame of reference within the genre of what is good and what is bad. And normally it's intent more than anything. It's normally like intent and maybe effort or like level of experimentation.
Interesting.
Rather than going through it, you know, like sonically, if it, you know what I mean?
It's yeah, because well, sometimes I wonder that. Often these artists are extremely prolific. Like Merzbow's probably into, I don't know, at least four figures in terms of albums, right?
Yeah.
So how do you distinguish? I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously I sound ignorant, but it, a lot of it all sounds the same. So that'll be interesting, yeah, to see where this album sits in his catalogue.
Yeah, it is really weird. So I guess, like, let's talk about a little bit about Mazzona himself. So his name is actually Maso Yamazaki. And the reason for Mazzona, it depends. There's kind of a few reasons where that name comes from or definitions thereof. But in Japan, there's Maso, which is like the masochist, and Ona, which is woman. So masochistic woman, Mazzona. Obviously, it sounds like Madonna, which is what,
which is
another part of it. It's also apparently an acronym for Mademoiselle Anne Sanglotante ou Notre Nymphomanie Auréole.
Sounds sexy.
Or another version apparently is Mystic, another selection of nurses, naked anthology.
There's a lot of sexual over and under tones here.
Yeah, yeah.
Which again seems to be like very prevalent throughout the genre. Like this Extreme Music from Japan compilation I had, it's got like an illustration of a woman who's all like bandaged up.
Right.
She's like a bit sexy as well. And a lot of Merzbow stuff has got like images of like masochism and bondage. And strange preoccupation.
I think there's that element with it. And that kind of comes from like the kind of gothy industrial metal kind of side of it, definitely. But also the fact that it's like, it's supposed to be like it's carnal music or whatever. Like it's the pure animal like energy behind it, which is obviously usually quite associated with kind of like, you know, sexual, well, sexuality or, you know, those carnal desires basically. So, yeah, so Mazzona, he's also performed under different names. It was Space Machine. He was also apparently, it says here, he was in psychedelic rock groups, Christine 23 Honor, whatever that is. And he also was in like a, what was it? Maybe it's on the Wikipedia thing. I've got it noted down here. He was also in like a Deep Purple / Led Zeppelin tribute band or something at one point in his younger days, which is quite weird.
That's cool.
He's in a thing called Acid Eater. He was in Bust Monster. The only other one I knew was Flying Testicle, which I always remember. It always sticks out.
Great.
But he currently is performing under the name of Controlled Death. And you can still buy, you can buy some of that stuff now if you're interested. And it's quite interesting, his background. So he kind of fell into noise by accident, it kind of sounds like. Because he actually, I think it was something like he got the Hannah Tarash LP, debut LP, which he hated. And then he accidentally got a noise LP by a band called Nord, when he was, which is called LSD, when he was trying to get an album by the band LSD. So he got a bit confused. That kind of ignited his interest a little bit.
That's crazy.
Sonic Youth are a big fan of Mazzona. They, Thurston Moore, like when Thurston Moore took over one of the MTV shows, I can't remember. I want to say it's like, it's not 60 Minutes or whatever, but obviously, and the Americans are probably going like 60 minutes. What are you talking about? It's like a serious panorama or something.
120 minutes.
Was it 120 minutes or whatever? But Thurston Moore, I can't remember. Thurston Moore had whatever. He hosted one of the shows, the MTV shows. And Masonno was one of the people that he brought on and talked about. He toured with Sonic Youth and all this stuff. And I've got a Sonic Youth story actually in a sec. He's toured with Beck, and obviously like Thurston Moore and Beck are like mates anyway. And Slipknot apparently. He even did a John Peel session.
No.
Yeah, which is quite strange. Yeah. So yeah, all this stuff is but I think his like day-to-day job was like, I believe it's like, it was just running a music shop in Japan. He was just the manager of a music shop.
Wow.
And yet went on these like tours.
He's actually had more mainstream exposure than I realized.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe more than Merzbow.
I would say in terms of the mainstream
rock audience, mainstream.
Yeah, probably yes. I imagine so.
He hasn't been on Top of the Pops.
Not yet. I mean, he's still going. I mean, he's this little tiny, like, you know, Japanese guy with long black hair. But yeah, if you watch him like live, if you look at his live stuff on YouTube, he goes for it, like full pelt, just absolutely just, he's everywhere. He's just jumping around. And some of his like gigs are like a minute long, 2 minutes long. He just fucks off and that's the end.
But how, maybe we can come to this later once we've listened to the music.
Mm.
But then I'm thinking, like, how do you then present that as a live act?
Well, he just screams into a microphone, shaking his like little box of coins through the distortion pedals, and then just basically jumps around screaming, turns the pedals on and off, and that's it.
It's done.
Done. Then he's off. He's fucked off. It's really worth checking out. So I guess let's have a listen. Let's go through the 1987 album by Masonna, all live recording at my room. But before that, let's take a bit of a break.
Are we going to go through track? We're going through track by or side by side.
I think
just going to have a general.
We can have a general chat about it. There are certain moments that I've highlighted within it.
Okay.
So people can check this out on YouTube. All live recording at my room. It was on a cassette originally. So there's two sides: side A, side B. They're about 16 minutes each. And if you watch it on YouTube, I've kind of jotted down the time codes of the whole thing. So I'm doing it as if it's like a 32 minute or whatever album, let's say, or piece of work, even though it's actually split into two different sides. Dan, it was released on cassette, but it's all in purple. It's very homemade, obviously. But the cover I thought was quite cool because it's someone who looks like they're made out of wood or something, like using a cutthroat razor, like shaving.
Yeah,
but it looks like he's like it's like a knife up to the neck that he might slit it. Like there's that like near, as in like expectation almost of violence, which I thought was quite interesting in terms of the music as well.
Yeah, you're right. It's very compelling image, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, and again, thinking about Tetsuo, it's almost like a man who's turned to wood rather than metal.
What were your first thoughts going into this album and listening to it?
Just why. when's it gonna stop?
yeah
it sounded a lot like what I thought it would sound like. It sounded a lot like the other Masonna tracks I'd heard on that compilation. Yep. Sounded a lot like all the other tracks on that compilation. And I struggled to grasp what I was supposed to be getting from this.
Okay, well, let me tell you.
I've got a fairly open mind about music. And like I said before, I am intrigued and I feel like I'm missing the party. So
yeah, fair enough. I think part of it is that it sounds like hell. It sounds like a pure horror. So you've got that, as you guys would have heard. It's got like the screaming, and I should say as well, this was the only thing I know about this actually was that it was recorded like as live, put it that way, There's no like overdubs or anything like that. It's just straight out. The screaming kind of vocals, the harshness of the sound itself, the pure feedback, the fact that it sounds so like monstrous. I think one thing I really love about it is that a lot of the time his vocals tend to like mold into the distortion. And it makes me feel really weird, to be honest. And it does sound like super, it sounds like something like not of this earth. It sounds like ethereal. It does sound super monstrous. I like that it sounds like that way. And there's an element of like disgust in there. There's like the screeching, like noise to it. Just feels like it's like a man with, you know, problems, just like letting it out, like almost like primal scream therapy or something like that. Which I quite enjoy. And the fact is, it's like, it's only half an hour. And I know people are like, oh my God, it's still half an hour. But like when you think of like Vomir, and I keep using him as a point of reference, only because I actually like, don't mind Vomir, but the thing with like the kind of wall noise is that it is like 2 hours and it's like constant. So the whole point of it is that it doesn't really like let up. There's no like dynamicness about it. Whereas with Persona, you've got those elements of it's like, has moments of quiet and then there's a sudden like burst of energy, or it will do something different. Whereas with like Vomir and all this, and I don't know, I might be saying that wrong, I have no idea. It's just, it's a bit dirgy, but not in a necessarily good way. I should say as well, like, I kind of didn't really talk about this, but my actual first time I saw noise and experienced it was watching Sonic Youth at the Roundhouse in 2007 when they did the Don't Look Back tour.
Okay.
And they did Daydream Nation in full, which I know we've spoken about before and I really like, and you're a bit nonplussed about it.
I've never heard it.
All right, well, there you go.
I've literally never heard that album, which is absurd.
It's only like 40 minutes. You might as well just check it out. But anyway, they performed that and they did some stuff off Goo and whatever, and I can't remember, but the support band were this noise outfit, and I think they may have been new, but they'd come from old noise outfits, the 80s or maybe the 90s, whatever, I don't know, but they were called Sutcliffe Jugend.
Right.
And they came on, and I specifically remember this, it was so loud and it was pure noise, and it was like, I remember everyone was looking around going, what the fuck is this? Like, what the hell? And they got booed. They got booed off stage.
Oh,
and they had to cut their set short to go back. And they were really like, they were on stage, like telling people to like fuck off and all this stuff. But I thought it was a joke. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
And that was my first experience of noise music. And my wife was there as well. And she would probably attest to that, that it was a bit weird. And she'd probably think I'm mad now by actually going out of my way now to like listen to stuff like that.
She one of the ones heckling them and swearing.
Fuck you, fuck you. No, don't think so.
That's a great introduction, though.
Wife. Yeah.
That is great. Because there's something like inherently confrontational about this music.
Oh, very, yeah.
And so to present it to, as a support to an audience that you know isn't going to be all that attuned.
Mm.
That's such a troll move.
It just makes Sonic Youth look good, doesn't it? So from an art perspective, and also from the fact it's like, well, it can't get any worse, can it?
First and stitch them up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well and good. Yeah. But yeah, so going back to Masana, so this side A, there's certain elements with it, and I know people could be like, how the hell can you distinguish bits of it? But at the 8:55 mark, and that's the only way I can kind of nail this down, there's this great bit, and it kind of sounds like he's using his voice in, and it sounds like a revving like motorbike that kind of gears up and suddenly like erupts into this like nuclear storm or something. And I remember like listening back to this as well, I was just like, that is so fucking intense. Like that is a bit mind-blowing. And then there's a moment at like 9:29, I'll send you these time codes so you can listen to it yourself. There's these like peaceful bits, and then this like absolute wave of distortion as he kind of wails over the top.
Well, should we listen to those bits now? And
well, I don't know if people can take it. All right, well, let's listen to the 8:55 mark and the revving motorbike sound.
Cool.
So what did you think about that?
What a racket.
What a bloody racket.
What a racket. This is probably, to me, like, this is probably what Nirvana sounded like to my parents.
Well, there's that South Park episode, which is exactly that, which is like, Randy is like, all he's hearing is just like someone like taking shits or something. Just the sound of shits. And he's like, no, this is cool, look. Or whatever. And he's like farting and he does like a band to try and do this kind of music, and then Stan realizes that the music is actually shit. It's just shitty music. But there's that, yeah, perception of like what audience, but that's just it, right? That is, I mean, you're right. There's an element here where it's like, it is just noise. It is like horrible noise. Like some people, what's one person's noise is another man's lovely art.
Absolutely.
So let's listen to the next bit, which is at 9:29, where you've just got these kind of peaceful bits and then this wave of distortion. Have a listen to that.
Okay, that was quite a cool moment. Okay. That was quite cool. I can see why, yeah, that your ears would prick up at that point.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's what I quite like about the noise genre rather than like harsh, well, I don't mind harsh noise, but like harsh wall noise, whatever you want to fucking call it. Where it's like, I like the kind of change that's happening. And I suppose like there's that sound specific at that point where it's like, or whatever. And I feel like it's like shaking something at the back of my brain. It's like a very physical thing. Do you know what I mean? Especially when you've actually got it loud. And that's one of the things that we should say as well, is that volume is a very important part of this. Like it needs to like shake you to your very, it's, as you said, it's intrusive, it's violent. And the loudness of it is actually part of it. So, you know, when I come to mix this down, I'll try and keep obviously steady because I don't want to blow people off the charts. But if you do want to go and listen to it, I would recommend listening to it fairly loud. Don't burst your eardrums or make any, you know, damage your hearing or anything. But, you know, that's definitely part of it.
Yeah, maybe where I went wrong was listening to this while I was doing some spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Because
you didn't give it your full attention. Jeez.
Well, I thought I was being attentive enough. But maybe it was quite intrusive when you're trying to like set up some formulae.
Yeah. Trying to actually use your brain for productive things. Yeah, that makes sense. So 11:43 is the next one I'm gonna make you listen to.
Okay.
And the reason why I like this one is because he's kind of playing with his voice a little bit throughout this whole thing, but especially bits like here where it's this manic type laughing that just descends into hell.
Wow.
Let's have a listen. 11:43 mark.
That was really horrible, but I quite liked that actually, because I do really like a horrible vocal.
Yeah.
For some reason, I think that human element is a bit more engaging for me. Kind of makes me think, you know, I love David Yao, of the Jesus Lizard and Scratch Acid, and I love when he does some just really unpleasant noises with his throat. It sounds like he's like choking or like doing a big phlegmy spit or something.
Yeah.
And that was, he started laughing, like you say, like it was a demon laugh, but it kind of became like a, like an old person's like phlegmy death rattle.
It's funny you say that actually. There's a, I can't remember off the top of my head there's a noise artist out there whose mum had, I want to say like cerebral palsy or something like that. And he recorded her death rattles. He
oh my God.
Screaming in pain as she died. And he turned it into a noise album, basically, or a track really? Or something, a piece of music, let's say. Yeah, which when you listen to is is horrible in a new sense, because obviously you've got this quite horrible, you know, noise, essentially. And you've got this woman's real screams of death as she's dying over the top. His own mother. And I think it's literally called like, I can't remember like what the noises I make as I pass away or something. And I think the cover is literally his like mother's corpse or like her dying face or something. Something fucking weird. And
wow.
Horrible.
I'll wait for the, is there like a Paul Oakenfold 12-inch house mix?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is what I mean. Like some of this stuff, it's like, it's taps into something like dark with some of these people. And it does kind of, you know, it does. And that's part of the intrigue, I think. It's like looking into like the void a little bit, the blackness of like people who are making this. And I've done it like with my noise stuff as well. But mine's obviously not quite as dark or savage, I don't think. But yeah, it's kind of, it feels very personal to that person, even though it's just noise. I don't know. It's weird. And again, I was worried, and we had this little pre-show chat, that I'm going to sound like a complete wanker trying to give any kind of like critique to this kind of stuff. But on that sense, I've just noted here, and last one was side A, at 14:18, and I've just put here, this is proper guttural screaming. So let's have a listen to this last bit of side A.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, so sorry, it's a little bit earlier than 14:18. It's actually around the 14:09 mark. Horrible.
Yeah.
That's when I'm being sick.
Yeah. It's starting to make me think of, I did a series on some Melvins releases that came out recently, including, they did an album called Hostile Ambient Takeover.
I think you've talked to me about it before.
Yeah, this is probably my favourite because it's got a lot of coming together of some of the styles and influences, one of which is more noise. So obviously you've got rock songs, but they've got some of this kind of sounding noise in the mix, adding like extra intrigue and ambience. And they had a guy called Sir David Scott Stone who played Electric Wire on the album, and he toured with them as well. And he was part of like the Melvins Fantomas big band, and he would just had a piece of wire on stage, and at the end of certain songs, as it kind of like petered out, he'd build up this like roar and sheet of just horrible electronic sound. But then there is a certain, yeah, there's like it's the, like you say, it's the improvisational nature of like when they choose like the timing and the rhythm to make certain shifts and changes and sounds can become quite like hypnotic and rhythmical.
Yeah,
so that just that little burst there that really made me think of like, yeah, the like the outro couple of minutes of one of the songs on the Hostile Ambient Takeover.
Yeah, interesting. That's big praise, seeing how much you love Melvins in the first place. So now we get through to side B. Side B, kind of, for me, is more gritty. It has a bit more of a screechier, metallic beginning, let's say. But it just comes in a bit more full force. So we're like, with side A, it kind of has more of a build-up, if you could say that. Yeah. Side B, it's kind of like straight in for the next, like, yeah, 16 minutes. And his vocals sound as if he's like built up to this moment a lot more, and now he's kind of like letting go. So one of the ones, and again, this is just as if it's one body of work, at the point 22:19, there's an element, and I was kind of talking about it before, where his voice kind of melts into the distortion, but it sounds like it's kind of that borderline, and this is it, right, the masochistic side of it. It's that like borderline between like sexual and the painful, basically. You can't distinguish where that noise is essentially coming from. It's quite interesting. So anyway, this is going to be a
sexy little bit, is it?
Well, don't know about that. In a sexy, in a dungeon kind of way. 2019, so listen.
No Barry White, is he? You get a girl back to yours and put some sultry sex music on. Pop that on, you're more likely to get a police investigation than a rogue hand job.
So, baby, I got tickets to go see Masana. That's your favorite, right? Masana? I like Madonna. I'm sure it's the same thing. Let's go check this out. This guy.
Those were particularly repugnant babblings.
That kind of like molding into the distortion, I thought was quite nice. Like that, again, kind of a bit Tetsuo, right? That kind of mold of man machine.
Indeed.
It's quite nice in a weird way. Next bit is probably the most horrible part of it, I would say, which is at the 26:33 mark, where he basically sounds like, it's a bit Deliverance pig style. Also like a little bit like Exorcist. So let's have a listen, 26:33.
Sounds good. I think I've heard you make that noise.
Jesus.
When we did our famous Evil Dead remake, circa 1999, I swear you made a noise like that.
It's weird. It's disgusting and horrible and I hate it, but I love it at the same time. It sounds like, you know, we did Black Christmas recently and you got Billy on the other end and he's making those kind of noises. It's like that.
Totally, yeah. Works on an emotional level. Just makes you feel anxious, I suppose. Sound like that.
Yeah.
It's funny you're pointing out all these things, because actually I do tend to enjoy these things within slightly more conventional, like noise rock.
Yeah.
Again, like Melvins, other related bands like Hepatitis, who kind of just like push out some willfully repulsive sounding and just like in your face like horrible meldings of sex and violence. Yeah, but I did, all of this kind of like washed over me a bit. I suppose you have to be really listening in quite intricate detail because this is all about small tonal shifts, isn't it? And just little detail that just brings out and just manipulates you slightly.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of one of the things I enjoy about The Noise is that it's kind of like finding, it's almost like your ears are searching, you're searching for something to like put your hat on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you're searching
for
like a hook or whatever. And so I think when I listen to it, and maybe, and this is going to sound wanky, it's like from a like musician point of view or whatever, like your brain is automatically, as I just said, like trying to find a hook or trying to find some kind of melody or something, and you can't find it. And that means that you're paying weirdly attention to like these little moments that sound a bit different or that stand out that might just be part of the cacophony that you would probably listen to if you're listening to it, you know, off the bat. But if you are already kind of acclimatized, let's say, to that kind of sound, then you start noticing these little bits. And there's nothing to say there's any, I'm not even saying that there's any necessarily any like form to it or like, how do I put this? Like any craft, let's say, to it, more so anyway than what might be subconscious or subjective or the element of creating these noises in the first place. Like the fact that there's no musical, it's something that could be done with perhaps no actual musical ability, but I still feel like in order to do that, you have to be talented in a certain way in order to kind of do this thing in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sort of emotionally switched on or connected with yourself. Mm-hmm. And everything you've just said, I think, is pertinent to free jazz.
God. Yes, but it's true.
But yeah, but I mean, the way that you engage with and enjoy this is the same way that people would have, I think, with free jazz. This is free jazz for Japanese sadists.
Yeah. I think the thing is with something like jazz and free jazz, and even though like it's not something I listen to, but it's almost like the same, but also opposite in the sense of you are very much tuned in with the rhythm, with the melody, with the notes and all this stuff. Whereas with this, you are purposefully trying to fight against that. So you're not trying to like slot in, or you're not trying to see where the music takes you. It's more just like you're kind of with the noise aspect, you're just kind of taking it.
Your health.
It goes from a pure emotive, very back to basics, animalistic, primal approach to it, rather than the masterful craft of being able to like, you know, play a saxophone and know what's going to happen. And okay, we might switch keys here, or like, oh, this guy's gearing up to do something. That is like professional, you know, side of it. And I think that kind of noise thing, that's probably why it's like a little bit, it kind of hangs its hat, I don't know why I keep saying that, on like the punk or like the kind of metal aspect of it, which is very much like the kind of pick up and play aspect, the kind of rough rawness, but also like the lack of any musicianship. And that's probably why it kind of floats around in those circles, I suppose.
Yeah, which is probably why, you know, this one, all live recording at my room. And a lot of these things that I've seen, they're often like very low-key DIY cassette releases and totally obscure.
Mm.
But like that emphasis on it being kind of DIY. Mm.
It's weird.
That seems to be part of the yeah, like the
ethos.
Aesthetic and yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, you think like our friend Rich, who we're in sales with, he...
that makes it sound like we've been imprisoned with him.
And our band sells.
Oh, yeah.
One day we'll be in prison with him. or we'll role play it out. He has an album. He's done a few noise albums by himself, like on the side. And he's got one called In the Bath, which is him just taking a bath for half an hour. He's recorded it. There's another one. I think he did one which is just like pipes or something like that.
Pipes. So, and there's one of him eating a curry.
That's right. Eating a curry. That's another one. So he does this whole like, so that's an element of noise, but in a completely different way.
It's not really what I would think of as noise. It's more like novelty. Yeah. but it's more, it's kind of, I suppose if anything, it's like avant-garde, ambient, montage.
With a twist of the keyboard humour. But yeah, I find it quite interesting. So this next one is the last one, which is, I'm going to put it at 30, 35. So we're coming to the end now of the whole thing. And to me, this sounds a bit more human and it sounds like he's almost pleading, which is a really interesting way in my head for how to kind of end something like this. So let's listen around the 30, 35 mark. So yeah, so it's more around like the 30 minute 10 mark, a little bit there.
Yeah.
But it's, these are kind of more weird sounds, but also sound a bit more like human, if that makes sense. Animalistic still, and nonsensical, but still like human and weirdly like pleading, and it's like coming, I don't know, like it's just weird, painy, horrible kind of sounds, but they're a bit more in your face here than they have been earlier on, perhaps, in this album. Yeah, what do you reckon?
Really reminded me of Yamataka Eye of the Boredoms.
Mm.
Do you know the Boredoms?
No.
They're a Japanese, what are they? I'd say they're more of a noise rock band.
Right.
But I think they've done like elements of like that's a bit more pure noise, but they have a vocalist who does all that kind of babbling, bellowing, really guttural, primal stuff. Mm. Very influential then on Mike Patton.
Right, okay.
And again, that, like you said, it is more human. And that really reminds me of Mike Patton did a solo album very early on when he was still with Faith No More.
Mm.
I think it's just called, what's it called? Adult Themes for Voice, something like this. There's got a lot of this like jabbering, frankly. <Right. Interesting. laughs> Don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's always obviously been a big fan of this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't surprise me if he was influenced to some degree by some of this.
Sounds right. That's it basically, Dan, for Masana.
What an experience.
Yeah, it's definitely weird, and I kind of appreciate that it's totally not for a lot of people. I quite like it. Again, I have to be in a certain mind frame if I want to listen to stuff like this. I guess, like, if you want to listen to, like, other things like this, as we've said, like Merzbo, however you say it, is the kind of next go-to if you're interested. Who else? Like, yeah, Hannah Tarash as well. I don't really particularly, that's weird. And again, like comparing these kind of things, but maybe don't really rate it as much as maybe other people do. Another one, Hijo Kaidan, is another, these are kind of Japanese artists, I should say. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, like check out like Vermeer, it might be more up people's street.
I think White House. If you want to go international, they're one of the early pioneers of all of this kind of genre.
Yeah. And I guess like Sissy Spacek as well is not the actress, obviously. There's a band called Sissy Spacek who I think are from LA. And I enjoy listening to them. And I realized that actually me and Rich did another noise thing. Separate from Static Static, which we recorded in about 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And each song is about 3 seconds long.
Okay.
And it's really weird, and it's a bit Sissy Spacek in that sense as well. I can't remember what it's called, even though I'm on it. I can't remember what the name of the outfit is or anything. I might check it out. I tell you what, I'm going to have a look for it whilst you tell me your final thoughts on what you thought of this album specifically.
Before I come to that, another recommendation I mentioned earlier, Shit and Shine. If you want to hear like a modern band that's still putting stuff out, and I'd really like to go and see them live at some point.
Mm.
But I quite like what they're doing. I think they're London based. They seem to play quite a fair bit.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting for sure.
Final thoughts. Before my final thought, actually, I have a question for you. How many times have you listened to this album?
I would say, including what we did like just now, probably 8 times. So not loads.
Do you think your appreciation of it has grown, deepened? Because to me, like I said earlier, it seems like an album where, you know, first time you listen to it, it might wash over you, or, you know, you're not going to pick out all the detail.
Mm.
But through repeated plays and maybe like learning it, that's where some of these small fluctuations might start to emerge.
Yeah, I guess part of it is that I don't want to learn it. I kind of want it to be fresh each time because I like the fact I don't know what it's doing or where it's going or what's going to happen next. That's part of the enjoyment of it for me. So if I listen to it...
You can't burn out on it.
Yeah. So if I listen to it too much, I would start to not enjoy the reason why I'm listening to it anyway.
Totally get that.
Yeah. The outfit, I should say, that I do this thing, which is called Surreptitious Glance, but I don't know if we actually released it. But yeah, that's like, it's like a 15, 20 minute album and each song's like 3 seconds.
Get online, kids. You might find a rare check nugget.
With the fact that I fucking forgot I'm even... forgot I even did it. It's really saying something. But that's quite noise core, I guess, if you want to call it that. It's another one.
Fuck knows.
Noise core, basically hardcore rock, but in noise fashion.
Okay.
But yeah, there's definitely like elements of noise still, but this is very much the extreme end of it, the more experimental end that's kind of just pushing that envelope a little bit more.
Well, my closing thoughts, I enjoyed this time together.
Mm.
I do you feel like I've got a little bit more of insight into this? It just strikes me as, you know, it's a very personal thing. Obviously, how the music's being made is very personal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it does seem like someone just like summoning up a very like deep internal feeling. Like when I think of, like, again, to put it in like a more of a standard rock context, you know, like Lennon's first album after the Beatles, where he's like, this is my like primal scream therapy. It was primal scream therapy. He'd been hanging out with that doctor. What's his name? I can't remember now.
Yeah, I can't
Tears for Fears guy.
Yeah.
And that was all like, just get it all out there. And it feels like the same sort of thing. As I can see, you know, it might be therapeutic even for the musician. And I suppose, you know, if it's sincere and they're feeling it, then it makes sense that there will be a small few select listeners who it will resonate with. And again, yeah, it feels obviously then very personal, which then makes me think, well, how do you find a consensus on what's good and what stands out? But I think you were going to tell us that at some point.
Yes. So I was able to find a few reviews, some of which were strange, but let's get into it. Let's go to the review section.
I hate it.
So it's weird reading reviews on stuff like this because it's generally favoured in the noise community, a lot of misunderstood stuff. But I was more interested in people who thought this was not so great.
Okay.
So there was a couple of reviews, one of which went into detail, a lot of detail, in it. This guy loved it. This guy absolutely. So I'm gonna give his review. Masana, this is by Lardo Pirate, and it's from Rate Your Music. Masana, with proper noise gear in his apartment before his awful era of voice and static, and golly, it's his best release. This is actually varied, good noise. Instead of yelling into a mic and letting pedals do the work for him, his voice appears here and there, but it's much better in this context. At one point, he shoves the mic in his throat and goes, E-E-E-E. I don't know which point. I don't know if maybe that's one of the time codes we gave out. It's a shame he became so bland, which is the absolute worst thing noise music can be. Just true, I imagine. If you're like into noise and then you think someone's like lost their edge.
Yeah.
It's like, well, fucking hell, that's a
just
real...
Just making noise for noise sake.
Exactly. You're literally just making noise. You're not even making noise with a capital N.
Yeah.
You're just making noise with a little N, and that must be awful. Must be terrible. So yeah, that's all I've got for that. But I thought that's quite funny. I haven't really got much for Nerd's Corner. There's been a vinyl release of this. There was one vinyl release that had like 199 limited edition thereof.
Really?
But, yeah, which is out there somewhere. But yeah, if you've got like the original cassette of this, then great. I mean, there's some stuff he's done which is literally just sitting on one cassette that he sold. It's only one copy of it out there.
I love that.
Which is weird, right? Crazy.
Yeah, it really captures my imagination though, things like that.
Mm. Yeah. But that's the thing with these noise artists, is they're very, generally anyway, they're very prolific and they'll do multiple releases, mainly because it's so fucking easy. It's all improvised. You just have to have a spare couple of hours, set yourself up, go for it, and then you've got it, you're done. You've not got to worry so much about it. So anyway, that's Masana, and that's a little bit of an insight into the noise genre, which I think we can both agree is very odd.
Indeed.
So yeah, that's it for the podcast this week. So
what are we doing next week?
Yeah, what are we doing next week?
I think we're doing a game.
Doing a game.
Which will be Streets of Rage. Sega Mega Drive or Genesis.
Yeah, depending on where you're from. All right, well, let's do that. Let's check it out. We spoke about Streets of Rage before in our Data Discs edition, actually. So yeah, maybe have a listen to that in preparation for next week. Otherwise,
do it, Odd Squad.
Exactly. Get to it. Goodbye, guys. See you.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram @anewwinter, Twitter @anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.